Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to In The Pocket. My name's Johnny.
And my name's Chris.
Two totally average bass players, and we're here to talk all about that bass. As well as answering your questions at home each week, we'll take a look at the latest news, break down some tones, all to give you the lowdown on the low end. This week, we are going through all of your questions. A bit of a Q&A special, if you like, before jumping back into some guest related episodes for next time. So it's going to be jam-packed. Before we dive into your questions, though, Chris, how have you been doing?
I am very lovely, Johnny. You join me in the daytime. Doing a podcast in the day, which is quite, because we're both unemployed. I mean, because we're both available at this hour. Mm. How are you?
It's fantastic. Yeah, I like seeing you in such wonderful light. It's almost like seeing you in the flesh, which I wish I could emulate every day.
I understand.
Yeah, I'm all right. You'll have to forgive my pathetic slug that's living on my top lip at the minute in a very poor attempt to have it this month of November. So, yeah, sorry about that. Bass-related stuff. It was my birthday last week, so I got a load of new basses through the door, which is very exciting.
Way!
I won't talk too much about what I've got. In fact, no. Do you know what? No, I will. Because
because
you're lovely podcast people, are my favorite fans.
Now, don't forget, you do need to describe what it is as well for the people who are listening.
No, go and look at the video. I've got a 2013 Fiesta Red Classic by P-Bass. And this is already on my Instagram as of like 2 minutes ago. A 5-string Yamaha BB, baby.
That is nice.
735 is the active one.
Very cool. Very cool. I have no new basses.
Well, I'm sorry about that, but you do have some. Yeah. You've got some new things in the post, though.
I do, and I'm not going to say what they are because I'm going to film some unboxings of them.
Wow, very exciting. Yes. Like I said before, we are going to be answering all of your questions. We put out a question prompt on our Instagram at In The Pocket Pod. You should definitely go and follow us on there for all the latest announcements, guest announcements, and where you can submit your questions.
Like big things coming soon.
Exactly. Like all of the lovely people who have done so today. Without further ado, shall we crack on with some questionos?
I think we should. And I have question one here already. I believe we have 13 to get through.
Whoa.
So this will be a long one. excuse me. What a great start. So, question one. Your top five, list of things. Wow, this is not slick at all. Your top five list of things everyone should take to a gig, aside from like bass, pedals, amp and cabs. Mm. Things like important tools, pens, paper, etc. Now, I have written an answer for this.
Wow. So we're gonna have to read it.
Yes, but would you like to
the camera?
Yes. Done. But would you like to go first? Do you have anything you'd like to start on, or shall I just fire this off?
I think fire it off. I've got a few in my head that are rattling around. I don't know if I've got five written down. I'm not as prepared as you, Chris.
Very well. Well, I wrote this down so I don't forget. So these are in no particular order, but these are things that I really make sure I bring. So phone charger. I've never done a gig where someone hasn't asked me, have you got a phone charger? So I've got a phone charger with me. I've got like a multi-plug thing. So it's like if they've got an Android phone, if they've got an older iPhone, a newer iPhone or whatever, charger. I've also got a power brick, but I kind of put that in the same thing, you know, just in case. Spur strings. Makes sense. Just in case. I mean, I've only ever broken a string on stage once, but always nice to have them. Hearing protection. Absolutely. I do not gig without hearing protection in. I don't go to a gig without hearing protection. Full stop.
Yeah, I made that change like last year. Like Lily and I bought some proper ones, like each.
Yeah,
our own ones, and it just makes it so much more enjoyable. I think, like, you take them out and you're like, oh my god, I can't believe how loud it was.
Yeah,
Sorry, continue.
And you don't want to go deaf, because once you go deaf, you never go back. A spur strap. Now, this might not be the same for everyone, but I use the Damasio clip locks, which are kind of like little seatbelt style strap locks. So if I lose my strap, I can't put a normal guitar strap on it. It's just, the bass is literally hardwired for a particular strap. So I have a second one just in case. Batteries, just in case. I mean, I mainly gig with passive basses at the moment, but it's always nice to have like a 9-volt or AAA just in case. And then I did a little bonus one. So this is technically 6 cables. Now, not just guitar leads. I've got a little bag that I take with me to my gigs, and there are 2 or 3 patch cables, just in case. An extra guitar lead, an extra kettle lead. I need 2 for my rig, but I take another one just in case. And all of the XLR cables that you would need to do the gig. So for me, that's 1 for the in-ear monitors and 1 for the pedal board to go to front of house. I bring those just in case, because I do lots of weddings and covers gigs where some bands, like let's say for example, I might take a last minute gig filling in for someone where the normal bass player just brings a big amp. It doesn't go through the PA. They just bring out big amp. They don't need any XLR cables. I could run the risk of getting to the gig and the singer going, oh, we only really have enough XLR cables for what we already need.
Yeah.
So then I'm snookered because I primarily run DI. So I bring everything as a self-contained unit. And you know what? It's not really in the list, but bring an extension cable. One of the big ones, you know, the circular ones that extend.
Yeah, that's a good
bring one just in case.
Especially if you're running a pedal board out front. Sometimes you don't know where the power... If you're not playing a venue, like you're playing weddings, it's likely that the wall behind you is going to be where the power is. So you can.
It's very common occurrence for me to plug an extension cable in front of me for... phone charger just in case, second charger for the GoPro because I just charge it up beforehand, 2 plugs for the pedal board.
Yeah,
so that's a 4-way done, and then that lead is going anywhere from like 2 to 10 meters. Like, it's going, again, depending on the venue. Like, sometimes you're lucky and it's event space with lots of power, you know, built into the floor, things like that.
Yeah.
But most of the time these are just nice posh rooms.
Yeah,
so the plugs are on a wall somewhere else.
So you think about us people with our pedal boards, which is...
Exactly. How rude. How rude.
For me, I am quite lucky that my rig kind of has a lot of things, and I've got the drawer in it now that I put a lot of my stuff in that I need. And it's a lot of crossover with your list. So I'm going to say my 5 are tools. So I bring a screwdriver and some Allen keys with me to every gig. I normally put them in a little pot that sits on my pedal board, and that has picks and ear protection in. So I'm going to count that as 2, because ear protection, I think, is very important as well. Now I don't go without that. So that's great. Cables is an absolute must. I bring little patch cables, because often, if you're not buying, like, they're a bit of an afterthought, some cables, I feel like. And if I've bought like something really cheap, but I've got loads of mismatched cables, some of which are secondhand. I don't know what they are, where they've come from, or what quality.
Oh, have you got the green and yellow plastic ones?
Oh, no, like not quite. But yeah, so I can't remember. So I don't know what their life is going to be like, you know, longevity-wise. So they could give out. So definitely bring that, especially as I'm running pedals as well in my rig. That's very important, because then you don't know what's going to be messing up. What else did I bring? Batteries, 100% for my wireless more than anything.
Yeah. If you had the Shure GLX-D14, you'd find it has a rechargeable battery.
Wow. Some reason I get even more nervous about rechargeable things. I don't know why.
Ah, no, the battery in that's unkillable. I've done like 5 one-hour gigs with it, and it's been fine. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, I've had wirelesses cut out before, and it's just the worst. So spare cable as well is the go-to, because I've always got it on hand. I always said, and we've spoken about this at length on this podcast before, just having it ready to go. Another one for me is a stand, because I take two basses to gigs.
Oh, yeah. I bring a stand. Yeah.
So I'll put that on there. I don't, you know, I'll lean a bass. That's fine. But like, for like, if you're playing an hour set and there's another bass on the side and it's very loud and vibrations, I don't really like leaning them that much. So if there's no space, I'll like to bring a stand to put it on. I've got that Hydra stand now that can take three. So I'll take that for the whole band. We'll put all of our backups on it. So that's quite good. And the last one, I don't know how many I've done. I think this is the sixth one.
You've done way more than five.
Yeah, is a water bottle. Love a bit of H2O, this guy. And I do not like putting drinks on the stage, near the amps, near the pedals and all things like that. Even if it's just water from the bar or something, which I'll always have on stage because, you know, I'm moving around quite a lot and shouting and singing and get a bit of a dry throat. So I always have water in between songs and things like that. So where I can. So having my own water bottle is great because I can shut the top on it and, you know, it's great for that.
True.
So
yeah,
to avoid spillages and things like that, having my own bottle that I can shut the lid on is a must. So yeah, that would be mine. Next question.
Not too bad. Question two. Now, these are in no particular order, really. What are your favourite poses or moves to make on stage? I love a busted jump.
Yeah.
Don't get to do it very often.
Whose do you do, though? Because they all had different ones. You've got the jump and kick your legs up. You've got jump and split your legs.
Yeah, I'm the Feeder Greatest Hits album. You know, okay. Jump with both legs, like one forward, one back.
Yeah.
Can't really do it when I'm gigging in boots. But, you know, I'm working on it. What else do I like? I like I find myself doing what I lovingly refer to as the Mick Thompson quite a lot. Okay. For those of you who don't know, Mick Thompson is one of the guitarists in Slipknot. And he tends to do a move quite a lot where it's like legs apart, crouch down a little bit, guitar kind of in the middle of the body, and then just like lots of headbanging. Tend to do that quite a lot when things get heavy. But that, because now, especially now the hair's a bit longer, can really, you know, get some wind.
Throw your weight around.
Absolutely. Yeah. Love it. Well, I'm a big headbanger.
Yes. Big time. Oh, big time. My neck is in ruins the next day, honestly. Like,
mine's not, though.
Is it?
Like, like, I'll do gigs and people will go, you literally banged your head and jumped around for an hour. And the day after, I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. Maybe I've got nerve damage.
But my neck is just permanently like this.
Yeah, like, this is fine, right?
I am a sucker. Just getting a phone call, which is no good, coming through to my Mac. I really like, don't do it much, but for one song. So like the other day we did Foo Fighters, then Nirvana. And
and is it always in that order, by the way?
No. We'll change it around. Depending if we're coming back to the venue and things like that, we'll swap it up.
Okay.
I love going out in the crowd or doing something like that. Like for Teen Spirit, it gets the crowd going so much more for that first chorus when everyone's ready to bounce and I'll go out there with them and help them out, you know, and then they're like, yeah. And like sometimes when people do that, I think it's a bit smelly or I'm like, oh, a bit cringe. But for the audience,
I love doing it too, though.
For the audience we're catering to, like, it works so well. It works so well. So like,
I also really enjoyed how you can tell you're dealing with like a hardened Nirvana consumer because you just went for Teen Spirit.
Yeah.
Like, I have that. Title. Yeah, I have that with, like, wedding bands, because it's always like, right, so, Brightside.
Just Mr.
Caroline. Boogie.
I do love a spin as well.
Oh, I like a spin. I sent you a spin video yesterday.
Yes, here's mine. I'm on a festival stage. Like, that's my favourite.
That is a good spin.
If it's a festival stage, big stage, I will do multiple in one. Wow. Yeah. Like going. Yeah. I love it so much. So much. You have this like out of body experience.
Yeah.
I love going, like, that's one of my things, strengths I bring to a band, I think sometimes is energy on stage. Like, if I'm having a good time, I want that to reflect onto the audience.
Very, very true.
So moves come into that.
I've just remembered, I do this a lot, right? I need to figure out how to do this, demonstrate and explain this. So, I don't know, let's say you're doing a song where it goes like, you're playing and it's like, you'll stop on like beat four. It's like, one, two, three, stop. And then you're in. Or there's like a bigger stop or something like that. I will, instead of muting the bass with my fret hand, which is my left hand, I'll come over and I'll grab the neck. Yeah. I'll come over and grab the neck with my right hand. Or, this is a cool one, if you get this right, you've got to get really good at muting to do this. I will throw the neck of the bass up with my fretting hand, up, and it will come up like this, upwards, so it's now pointing straight up, and I will catch it in my picking hand and mute the strings that way.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. So that sounds impressive. You've got to be quite accurate.
Yes, it's like if this little tripod is the bass, it's like I'm here, I'm playing, and then I'll go like that. So like I'll throw it up and catch it like that, and then that will, and you've got to get it right, because obviously it needs to land in your hand and you need to have it locked down and fully muted. Yeah. Otherwise, it's going to go and then you'll keep playing.
Worth hitting the tuner at the same time.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, absolutely. I've been known to do that. Like, in fact, one of the things I used to do was I would hit the tuner for stops and then bring it back in again just in case.
You're playing like gents.
It's like a tremolo pedal.
Tuner every time.
Yeah, but the problem is the quad cortex tuner doesn't turn on immediately. There's like a half a second or whatever, which is fine. I don't need it to be instantaneous, but when you've got like a Boss tuner, it just goes off, on. So that's cool. Any other pauses?
The last
love a high
one.
Love a high kick.
That was the last one for me.
How many pairs of jeans have you split doing it? Because I did it last week.
Really?
I blew the arse out of my jeans on stage.
slapping bass and blowing ass.
Absolutely.
Blowing ass, this guy.
Nuclear Bumhole.
That's an amazing band name. Right.
Next Chris Horrocks and the Nuclear Bumholes. Right, next question. Okay, this is a bit of a long one, really, but so this is from Callum. It says, what advice would you give to someone who is looking to become a session player? Things like advertising, gear, business plan, prices, etc. Not an easy question to answer.
I will answer it. Prices is always a difficult one, because you're like, how do I put a value on myself? And you always feel like, I'm going to have to undercut people, or what?
It's not as hard as you think, because I've noticed there's give and take, but I can give you, I can tell you what I would expect to earn from various things.
Yeah.
So if I'm gigging in a bar, if I'm gigging in like a pub, for example, or a very small bar, I would expect to see absolutely no less than £60, closer to £75, £80. If you're gigging in a nicer bar, like maybe in a more affluent area, that kind of thing, you really would be looking at the bottom end £100. Realistically, most bar work I've been offered like £150, for example. Then there's a lot of variation once you get from 150 upwards. And this is kind of like the corporate and wedding gig. So to give you an example, I'm playing a wedding tomorrow. So at the time of this coming out today, and I'm being paid £160 for two 45 minute sets. That's the lowest I've been paid for a wedding ever. But I'm doing it because it's with some guys that I gig with a lot. They offer me a lot of repeat work, and apart from the drive, it's very easy. I know the set very well. It's good fun. But then 2 months ago, I did a wedding and got paid £375. Yeah. But that's for different, you know, who's the client? Where is it? What are you doing?
Yeah.
There's a lot of variation, but I think realistically, the pricing thing is difficult, because it also comes back to you know, who are you? You know, that kind of thing. Like, I've been doing the wedding scene for about 12 months. So I can spot kind of like, hang on a minute. Like, I got offered something the other week for £180. And immediately I messaged back the guy going, that is a 250 quid gig and you know it. And I'm willing to say, like, I don't believe in a race to the bottom. It's like, I know I'm worth 250 quid for that gig. If you want someone else for 180, you can take him if you want, but I don't want to be arrogant, but I know I'm good at my job.
I think there's a lot of value in putting value on yourself. You know, I get the same thing with like influencer stuff, you know, or like trying to, like brands would be like, oh, can you promote, do you want to promote this on your channel? And I'll be like, yeah, I can, it's like a paid promotion, you know, and I'll start offering packages and things like that. Yeah. And I'll be like, oh yeah, it's going to cost you this much. And then they go, oh no, but we can give it to you for free if you want. And I'm like, two years ago, I would have been like, yeah, oh yeah, it's fine. Yeah, and now do you know what? It's not actually gaining me anything, me doing this. I'm just getting a product that I don't really want.
You didn't really want anyway.
No, exactly. So, and it's no benefit to my audience, really. Like, I'd only do it if I'm being paid to do it because I want to make a living out of it, you know? Like,
yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And then you've also got other things where it's like repeat business. Like, I'm taking a gig this weekend that's quite low paying for this sort of industry. But I've probably done about 10 gigs already this year with the same act. And I've got 4 gigs with them in December. And most of the time, I'm gigging with them next month for £300. So it's like, sometimes I'll, you know, they gave me a gig on a Monday a couple of weeks ago, and they were like, it's a Monday, which is good, but it's not very well paid because it's a Monday wedding. They tend to be quite a lot cheaper. So I was like, look, for me, if it's covering fuel, it's covering any time I've had to put in to learn the material. Now, there's very little learning time for this band because I've played the set before. And it's more than I would get working in a normal job, you know, you know, like, you know, a normal, I don't know what minimum wage is, but like if you're working for like £11 an hour, which is like the living wage now, a full day's work, you would walk away with about £85 before tax. So it's like, if I'm earning more than that, like if I'm walking away take home like 120, 150 quid minus expenditure, I'm happy. It's either that or I sat at home watching House. So
Exactly. So it's, and it's not too inconvenient, or, you know, the benefits outweigh the costs, basically, literally. And
yeah, it'd be completely different if I was like I did a, I took a wedding for £150, again, super low. And then this was with a band that I needed to learn their entire set. They're a band called The Weekenders, which do like specific early 2000s indie stuff. And they're really good. So I thought, the reason why I took the gig was I thought, oh, well, you know what? I don't know how to play this two-door cinema club song. And I don't know this Kasabian song and all this kind of stuff. So I thought, you know what? I'm gonna do it. Yeah, the money's not great and all that sort of stuff compared to, say, like a 250 quid wedding. But it's a nice little, you know, it was a nice little different change for me. The travel time, it was like 35 minutes. It was just outside Chester, which is like a 35-minute drive for me. The guys were dead nice, you know, like they've already offered me repeat business. So I'm like, you know what? Yeah, you took a bit of a dip on the way in, but hopefully, let's say they offered me something else for next year. It's like, well, I don't need to learn your material now. I just need the morning of the gig to run your set once.
Yeah.
And then I'll do the gig again. So what was £150 for a week's work is now £150 for a day's work. And £150 per day's work is very good. Do not let anyone tell you otherwise.
Yeah, exactly. And it's going back to the advice for someone doing freelance and being a session. I suppose it's thinking logically about how is this going to benefit me, not just financially. You know, like, of course, you've got to get paid to do it. You're not just going to do it for free. But like, it's a low-paid job. But
should never work potential. For free.
No, but I can see potential for what else this could bring in the future, you know.
Yeah, and you, and that's a that hindsight is a skill you will pick up all the time. I did not have that ability 6 months ago. It's just time. And just so we're not sat on this question for too long, if you're all right, I'm gonna rip through it, if that's okay, because there's a few other points to it. I'll do the easiest parts first. Gear, don't overthink it. If you're starting from scratch, get a classic vibe, jazz bass, classic vibe, P bass, something like that. Don't worry about one with rounds, one with flats. Have a tone control and get a bass with rounds. Just do that, nice and easy. You don't really need any pedals. I would say you need a tuner. Probably it, really. You need
actually, that. A dark glass infinity and a sad type. And a compressor.
Sorry, so obviously you need to buy like a quad cortex. And that's fine. I would recommend some sort of small to mid-sized amp, like for example, Fender Rumble, Boss Katana bass amp, that kind of thing. Nice and simple. You don't need to overthink it. Most of the time, realistically, what I actually find myself doing most of the time, I could do with like a tuner and then like a Sans amp or a very simple DI based preamp, like anything, like the Laney Digbeth, the Ashdown DI, the MXR DI, I could very easily do all my gigging work with a tuner and just a very simple bit of tone shaping into a PA. That's fine.
Well, put your money where your mouth is, Chris.
No, because I already did when I bought a quad cortex. So, and then the other thing, sort of like business plan and advertising, that this is hard because realistically, I would say at least 90% of my income, my paid work as a session player, has been word of mouth. As in, you did a gig with this person, they said you were good, are you free? Like that kind of thing. So I would advise what you want to be doing is get out and play, you know, do jam nights, these kind of things, open mic nights, sort of start getting to know people, post you playing more online. If you look at my Instagram, my Instagram is basically a glorified advert for you to hire me. Or when I speak to someone, or let's say, I don't know, let's say someone is talking to Johnny and they say, I need a bass player for something. Now, what Johnny would do is recommend himself, but that's not the point. Let's say Johnny doesn't play bass and he goes, let's say Johnny's a drummer, for example, and he goes, oh, well, there's my mate Chris. He might be good. Now, to save everyone the hassle involved, all Johnny needs to do is load up my Instagram and hand his phone to the person and go, have a look. And I have pinned posts at the top of my Instagram showing me playing bass. So they can just go, oh, okay, click. Yes, it's pretty good. Because realistically, they're going to spend 5 seconds evaluating if I'm any good or not.
He gets it.
Yeah, this guy's good, done. Right, job done, nice and easy. So in terms of advertising, business plan, take as many gigs as you can. We just talked about pricing, but if you get offered some work and it's a little bit on the lower side than what you prefer, way up if there's other advantages, you know, getting your name out there, things like that, maybe then it's worth it. I'm not saying take a wedding gig, £30. Don't do that. But if you're playing, you know, if you're doing like a pub gig with like a drummer and a singer / guitarist and it pays £50 for two 45-minute sets, and it's like a under 30-minute drive from your house, and that's under 30 minutes not on the motorway, and it's like the other side of your town, for example.
Yeah.
I would consider taking it. I would consider taking that, even as someone who gigs anywhere from £60 to 300 and, you know, 300, 400 quid. If I'm available and it's worth it and I can make it work, I will say yes.
And like you say, if it's on like a Monday or a Tuesday night, you know, ones where you're not normally going to get work anyway, you're like, yeah, if it's not a high value day, you know, like a Friday or a Saturday, basically, when the majority of your gigs and events are going to be.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And the final bit of advice on this, I always say to everyone is, don't be late.
I think it's safe. Don't do it.
Don't do it.
Get off my land.
Back off. Are you based in the UK? Yes.
Are you in Wigan?
Get lost. I want your gig. Don't be late. Don't be a dick. That's literally that. that'll go a hell of a lot further than you think it will. Don't be late. I am always early. Like, if the arrival time is 6 p.m., I am in the car park at 5:30.
Yeah. It's like, it goes, like, lateness is almost like a joke and a meme amongst musicians and bands. Like, oh, yeah, if you say this time, they'll be there like an hour later. And it's just
I did a gig last week where I got to the venue at 5:30. Arrival time was 6. The singer who had the PA was 30 minutes late. But
you're like,
it's not my concern. You know, like, if they're late, it's their gig as well. They're in charge. If the boss is late, you can't you can't ring your boss and go, what time did you call this? You'll get absolutely massacred. So it's like, it doesn't matter if that other person is late. It's not about that. You, though, you be early. Early is on time. On time is late.
Yeah. 100%. Good advice, Chris. Yes. Shall we move on to our next question?
Yes. The next one, this kind of bleeds into the previous question. It's, what are your thoughts on using something like Fiverr for freelance session work? The answer is, I don't know a lot about it. I am looking into it. I just haven't looked into it that much because I would like to get into a lot more kind of like remote recording stuff. You know, so it's like, for, I don't know, £75, I will track bass at home and send you 3 takes of the song of three different ideas, a DI and a reamped bass tone. You know, that kind of thing.
I think, now I don't have any experience with it.
Neither do I, initial, really.
Yeah. My initial marketing head on makes me think that it could be good for getting some work, but not long-term work. Or like, no, custom. You know, just one-offs. Because likely, if somebody is wanting repeat customer, oh yeah, get this bass player, against, they're going to know, they're going to be in the know and know people that can do it anyway. Yeah. So I think it's going to be people wanting it for a bit of music or for something that they're doing and don't know anyone. And I don't think that's going to be likely that they're just going to keep repeating it and getting it through Fiverr. And it's going to be once at a time. Because once they make that rapport, you might go direct with them or something, you know. So I think it's not going to generate a lot of long-term.
Yeah. I feel like... I think if it's not too much hassle setting it up, just do it. But I it's not something I have a great deal of knowledge of. And I can see, like you said, Johnny, I can see it being like, you know, oh, I might get 1 or 2 gigs a year from it. But that's still like £150. It's better than zero.
I think it would be not even gigs. I think it would be it's going to be mostly like you say, online recording stuff.
Might be a
baseline for this. And who knows? AI will probably fill those shoes soon.
Yeah.
Nolly's plugin. Woohoo.
Yeah, thanks, Nolly. I love how a bass player has made a plugin basically to take work off bass players.
Off of himself.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I think in his eyes, he's like, I'm getting paid to do it and I don't even
Royalties. It's funny, isn't it? Because it's like, it's all these things are designed by guitarists and no one's doing a MIDI guitar plugin. Have you noticed that?
Well, yeah, that's the thing, because it's
the
bass sits in the background, you know, and you don't need it to be have expression behind it.
Exactly. Stop it.
Let's go back to rock and roll. Next question.
Next question. Oh, I missed one. Okay, right. Tips for dealing with back pain and having a bass around the neck. Well, first off, your bass goes around your shoulder, so that's probably what you're going
yeah,
wrong.
That's where you're going wrong. Just hanging it on here.
Absolutely. Go on, you start, because I figured out what to do with this ages ago.
Oh, there we go. I mean, I'll be honest, I don't often get that much issues. The only issues I'll get is from lifting gear. And, you know, I've done many a manual handling videos and training to bend those knees, boys. Bend those knees. So I don't know if I have advice. I think it's... Okay, well, an interesting one is our drummer recently, the most recent gig we did, he was suffering from really bad, like, carpal tunnel. Meaning that he was losing feeling in his hand, cannot grip his stick. So we did practice like a couple of days before the gig, and you know, we're thinking we might have to cancel this gig because we only got through 5 songs of practice. Yeah. He was like, I can't, I'm, And that was the sensible decision.
Catch it early.
Don't damage yourself. Don't force your body to do something it's clearly not ready to do. Pain can be a sign.
Pain is there for a very specific reason, and it is not weakness leaving the body. It's like every actual like half decent personal trainer will go, there's a very big difference between my arms are sore from the gym and my elbow hurts. Those are two very different problems. One is it's all right, push through the soreness. The other is you might have sprained your elbow, we need to stop.
Yeah, and you can really do lasting damage.
That's what
we wanted to avoid. You know, we were all like, dude, your health is first in here. We're not going to be upset at you because you've got an injury. Like, what?
Yeah.
And annoyed, you know. So it's just putting that first and recognizing that and not pushing yourself through something. What were your thoughts on this?
I was going to say, for dealing with kind of like back pain and stuff when you're playing bass, you might want to be looking at essentially how you stood. What's the height of your bass? How are you? Like, think about like a central column of like from your head to your toes. Where are you? You know, like, are you, where are you? Like, are you in a, you stood in a stress position essentially for an extended period of time? And what can you do to alleviate that? So for example, when I'm gigging with like with Darla, for example, I put my bass quite low. But I will do some stretches beforehand. Like, I'm thinking about kind of like, okay, you know, are my hips and glutes activated so they'll support my back, which is what they're supposed to be doing.
My glutes are always activated. They're activated right now.
Exactly. But then when I'm playing a wedding, and also the Darla sets are like, you know, when we do the shows, they're only going to be like 30-minute sets.
Yeah.
Whereas with weddings,
to do that more.
Exactly. Yeah. Whereas with weddings, it's like, I'm going to be.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Play anywhere from, over the course of a night, 90 minutes to 3 hours, depending on the gig. My bass is a lot higher when I play with wedding bands. It's not super high. It's kind of like almost where it would be when I'm sat down. It's kind of in that kind of like up, you know, resting on the stomach kind of thing. And I'm thinking about, you know, how am I stood? You know, what am I doing in terms of like, how heavy is the bass I'm playing? Like,
That was my next thing I was going to say is,
because
the weight of your bass, is it a backbreaker? You know,
absolutely.
The weight of the gear.
When I've got a long gig, I don't take the Music Man. The Music Man's a heavy bass. I'll take the Godan or my newer P bass because they're quite light. I mean, they're not light, but they're definitely not as heavy as like the Music Man is. Yeah. And really, you know, really, really think about that. Like, actually be like, how am I stood right now? You know, am I, because I've noticed for quite a long time, I used to lean on my right foot. So my right foot would be taking all of my body weight. And I would tap my left foot to keep in time, which basically meant I'm putting my entire body weight on my right hip. So then my leg would start to hurt and my back would hurt. So now instead I've got almost out of the habit of tapping my foot, and I'm either nodding my head or I'm just thinking about the tempo instead, in order to keep my weight distributed better. So it's just things like that, really.
The
height of the bass, stretching beforehand.
The strap you have on, like, even that can make a difference.
Yeah,
you can buy bigger straps that can alleviate that.
I'm considering doing that,
stopping neck dive as well. If that can be uncomfortable with different parts of the body, if you're constantly having to,
yeah,
like, if you've got, like, imagine if the person asking this question has got like a massive Thunderbird and it's like really low and they're like, I don't know why I'm looking around an 810 and they're like, I don't know why I'm hurting.
Yeah, exactly. And then also it's like if you've got your bass quite low, if you're a right-handed player, you might be dropping your right shoulder to get your arm down to play with a pick. And you need to, if that's the situation, it's like you need to decide whether, do you want cool points or do you want a shoulder injury?
Yeah.
Because like, you can have cool points. Cool points is okay. Like I said, for like 20, 30 minute Dala sets, I'm going to have my bass nice and low, that kind of thing. I am going to stretch beforehand. I'm going to stretch afterwards, but I know it's only for a relatively short period of time. If I was doing a 3-hour set, I would not be stood like that because I'd be in bits afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. So you've got to take all of those things into consideration. I think we've done a good job there. I think
good job indeed. Well, next question. This will be easy. Is slap bass cool? This person's
no.
Then there we go. No. This person's gone on to say, I love it, but the internet seems to hate it. What am I missing? I would have gone the other way, you know. I hate product demo videos.
Where the
person is just, well, I mean, you do everything. You play with like a pick, you play with your fingers, you'll do some slap.
Well,
that's
my
fine.
Priority order goes pick, finger, slap.
Yes.
For the majority of people, it should be finger, pick, slap.
Give or take. But what I hate is like, here's a demo of the new blah-dy, blah-dy, blah chorus pedal. And it's a double thumb tapping thing where there isn't even any low end anywhere. All you can hear is kind of thing. And it's like, yeah, okay, cool. I can't play that. You're hard. Well done.
Yeah.
But now, I don't know what the pedal sounds like.
Yeah.
Which is why, as well, when we went to Ashdown and we did those little playthroughs of the new basses, we were both saying, is this boring? Like, is what I'm playing boring? And they were saying to us, like, no, you're just playing normal stuff.
Well, that's kind of why I always pride myself in not being amazing sometimes, like or playing's not that crazy stuff, especially when I do a demo. Like the intro stuff might be a little bit fancier or a little bit more tuneful.
Yeah, but the meat and potatoes of your videos are very much like simple eighth note stuff.
Yeah,
you know,
very
normal bass line. Yeah,
because that's how we'll want to hear it. You know, to hear a simplified version of what an average Joe sounds like. Going through it because that's
absolutely
the majority, especially as I'm catering for the lower, more affordable market, that realistically that's what the players are going to be like. So it makes more sense, it's more relatable and more useful to the person watching it. They don't want to see crazy. Demo stuff aside, I think slap is super fun. There's the types of playing and bass lines you come up with are very different to other playing styles, I think. So I think it's cool. I don't think it's rubbish. I just think it's limited in its usefulness in demoing gear sometimes because it's not always the most applied thing. And it shouldn't be used as an integer of success or how good a bass you are. Because can you slap at the bass, man? You know, like get good at slapping, you know, that's not necessarily.
I will round this point off with one specific quote that I like to say a lot. I've been asked to slap bass once.
Yeah. Because it's not common. It is not common.
I've been asked to do it once in, I don't know how many gigs. Well over like 200. I've been asked once. So that's 0.5%.
In fact, in my live playing, I have also used it once. And that was because I wrote a bass line in like a post-hardcore song that had a slap bass part. It's great. And it sounds like it would be weird, but it was great. It's just not as common as people make it out to be, but because it's bass, people are like, yes, slapping and funk. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Like thanks, Paul Rudd. You ruined that for us.
Yeah, man.
Okay. Man. Slap of the bass. Question. This is pretty much specifically for you, Johnny, and only you. Why have we not seen more of your Warwick Corvette 5?
It was very simple because I sold it. Sorry.
Well, there we go.
I bought that bass on a whim to flip because I was up for a ridiculous price and I was like, I don't really like Corvettes. The horn on it is a bit dongish for me. And like, don't get me wrong, I very nearly didn't sell it because it was fantastic. It played really well and sounded incredible. But it was up for, I bought it in Cash Converters because it was up, I saw it for sale. I was like, that's a German Warwick and they've got it out for a ROM-based price. So I was like, regardless,
the base.
If I'm wrong and it's not worth that much, I'll demo it, you know, and then sell it on for what I bought it for, because I think with some nice photos, I can sell it on. It's amazing what nice photos can do, you know? And so...
Case in point.
Exactly, you know? Look wonderful. So I just bought
it to sell. Have you seen the lenses we use for this podcast? Have you met us in person?
Bunch of munters. I just bought it to sell, to be honest, and I made a little reel about it, and that was it. But yeah, it was... had some other stuff that I needed to pay for and get through, so I thought I'll sell it on and make the cash, and then so sorry.
And there we go. Okay, big one now.
Ooh,
active or passive?
I mean, there's different applications. Overall, I'm a passive guy. You know, there's less anxiety of batteries running out. Active, I tend to use preamp pedals and things like that. And I find if you're going preamp, it's a bit much. Of course, the answer there is to just not use the pedal, I suppose. But I kind of like that sound that comes out of the pedals and it's consistent. And the battery won't run out. So, yeah, passive overall for me. I love a P bass, a jazz bass, like simple. That being said, active basses are great as well. A Stingray, amazing with a preamp in it, and that Yamaha I've got now is active, and yeah, it's cool. But I do really like it in passive mode as well, and it's the same volume,
which is good.
So
which is
very good. So yeah, for me, it's overall I like passive basses; they can do great things. But I'm active, but overall, I'm going to say passive.
Me too is the short answer. The only other thing I would say, in fact, no, it's not. It's just a repeat, really, of your point. Like, I like active basses a lot. For a lot of my working playing, I'm 100% passive now, just because I'm playing for a long time. I'm anxious about the battery dying. I know they can last for like 500 hours or whatever, but I don't believe you. And then it's like I need to constantly remember to unplug my bass when I'm playing active, just in case. Whereas if I'm playing a passive bass, I can have it plugged in on a stand and it can sit there for like 2 hours, and then I'll do a set, and then it can sit there for half an hour, and then I'll do another set, all these kind of things. Yeah. Like, for me, just passive is fine. If I was playing like I really like my Dingwall, I do use it active quite a lot, mainly for a bit of like, I'll like increase the treble a tiny bit just to get a bit more pick attack, and that's it. Or I'll roll, because the Dark Glass preamp, the mid range is at 500 hertz, so I'll set that and I'll dip the mids, because usually you are kind of dipping that 500
dip
hertz
the
range.
Mids.
Yeah, cool, yeah. Kids, scoop the mids. but yeah, passive. I prefer passive personally, but yep. they're both great. I have just as many active basses as I have passive basses.
I probably got more passive, I think, but
yeah.
Nice.
All right,
we're friends. We agree.
Hell yeah.
Next one, please.
Short one. I'll read the full thing. This is from Jimbo. Let me get my phone up because I can't see. Hey, Jimbo. Hopefully Johnny has remembered my question about how to deal with guitarists who refuse to alter the EQ because they have so much bass in their EQ settings in live rehearsals and performance scenarios. This is short, Johnny. Can I do this?
Yep. You're more welcome.
Your guitarist is an idiot. There we go. There's a couple of things. One, to be honest, if you've communicated something to someone and they're not going to do it, that really is all you can do at the end of the day. That's what I'd say, unfortunately. Alongside that, as a guitarist, if they've got too much low end in their signal, they're just doing themselves a disservice at the end of the day. Now, I understand if you're playing in like a rehearsal room, the other problem is as a guitar player, so I'm allowed to say this, it's very easy to sit at home and have a sound that has not really a lot of mid-range, lots of treble, lots of bass, quite scooped from a guitar perspective. Sounds sick when you're playing on your own. When you get into a gig venue, you kind of disappear or you become a bit too fizzy because you need that barky, honky mid-range and not a lot of low end to get through the mix and make room for other people. Now, if this person isn't willing to do that, there's not really much you can do. The only thing I would say is take pride in the fact that the guitar doesn't really sound that good for like a live scenario, and there's not much that you can do. And as soon as you get to I don't want to call it a professional venue because that implies where you're playing is unprofessional, and that's not what I mean. But as soon as you get to like a really big venue with a big PA and a sound engineer who really knows their stuff, they are going to do one of two things. They're either going to say to the guitarist, turn the bass down. And nothing's going to change until they say that, as in the event will stop until that person has done what they're saying. Or what they're going to do is they're going to roll loads of low end off in the PA. And then your problem has been solved by someone else. So I would say, just to wrap it up, if you've spoken to them and they're not willing to do it, there's not really much you can do about it. And rest assured that eventually the problem will just kind of be solved by itself and they'll be left going, oh, I couldn't really hear myself on stage tonight. And it's because they've had all the low end taken out of the guitar. Because they should have been focusing on the mid-range.
We're very quick to villainize sound guys sometimes. I always think like, oh, they're the enemy because they're not going to give me the sound that I want or whatnot. But they're our best friends. And we need to trust in them sometimes that they're going to do the right thing for the sake of the front of the house. I would say also that that person wants to sound amazing themselves. And therefore, I think the only way that they're going to come to the realization that they need to change is through their own doings rather than you telling them.
Yeah.
I think it's better, like you said, to kind of not say anything or not so heavily say it to them, because it's just going to piss them off and they're not going to react well to it, I don't think. By the sounds of it, if they're refusing, like, it's not going to do any good. I've had it. It's broken a band up before. Literally, I've told a guitarist, you are too loud and too too harsh. Can you turn down a bit? Then that it's caused them to be upset. And then it has ultimately left to them quitting. And like,
which is a bit much.
It is. And it reminds you of that scenario where you're like, it's sometimes better to not say anything and because they need to realize that themselves.
Exactly. I think that's all we can cover. And if it makes you feel any better, there's a lot of guitarists who don't do that. So I wouldn't worry.
Yeah.
Like, I gig with lots of like full-time professional guitarists who, when they play the guitar on their own in soundcheck, it's really thin. There's not a lot of treble. There's not a lot of bass. It's kind of just this like barky mid-range. Yeah. And then I start playing underneath them. Sounds fantastic.
Because that's where I think often, if you just think of it very simply, bass, guitar, vocals. Vocals are in the high end.
Yeah.
Guitar's in the mids, bass in the low. You know, like
pretty much. And then also it's like you've got to, you know, we're all competing with cymbals. We're competing with like the lower register parts of a vocal. Yeah. There's a lot to balance, which is why a proper sound engineer is like worth their weight in gold, because they, you know, that's what the audience is hearing. Yeah. And if you've got a bad sound engineer, or you've got a sound engineer who's gone, oh, but the guitarist has bullied me into having loads of bass in the front of the house, it's just going to sound like shit. Is the short answer?
Yeah,
yeah. Okay, I'm gonna. We've done that one. We'll end on this one. We'll end on not this
we're,
one,
we're
but
at
we'll
the
end.
On,
no, we've got three left.
Oh.
But I mean, I'm not doing them now in chronological order. I'm just, we'll do that one, then we'll do that one, then we'll do that. Okay, great. So, question something. It's all the blur now. 10, I'm going to say, maybe. Oh, well. What strings are you currently finding are your favorite? I've pretty much always been an Ernie Ball man. I'm wondering if I should branch out into some different brands and give them a try.
No harm in doing so.
Not at all. I mean, no.
I think we use similar strings, don't we, Chris? What are you on at the moment?
Diodario.
Yeah, me too. I find that they last longer than early balls and sound just as good. There have been a couple of occasions when I've picked up a used bass and been like, oh, these strings feel really good, or they're fairly new. And I'm like, oh, these sound great. What are these? And they're like, yeah, just Ernie Balls. I'm like, oh. Like,
yeah, I think...
I do get surprised by them sometimes.
Yeah, I think that P bass that we bought, that I bought when we went to Bass Bros, I'm fairly certain that had Ernie Ball strings on it. I actually think it had stainless steel strings that were not too... new but not old. Not new but not old, still quite zingy, because I've since swapped those strings around and I've put the exact same strings on my Godan and taken the flats from the Godan and put on the new P bass, and the flats are Diodario as well. They're the Diodario chromes. But yeah, I've pretty much always been a Diodario guy. It's what I just, and not through a specific, you know, I tried this, and this is the favorite. It was kind of just, I used those when I played guitar. I bought them on bass. For me personally, I tend to find that Ernie Balls and Roto Sounds kind of like lost a lot of like the zing and the interest quite quickly for me. Yeah. That may or may not be true, but it's just my experience. And then what else? I'd like to try some Elixir strings. I know you've used them before. One of my friends uses them for one of his basses, and he gigs way more than me. And he's like, yeah, these are fine. Like, they're still... Yeah. I've played his bass and gone, how old are these strings? He's like, 8 months. I'm like, no, they're not. Like, they're super spanky.
Trust me, they are... They last a long time, the Elixirs. It's definitely... Because there's so much money, it's like, oh, I feel so painful, but spending that on strings. I don't know if, like, if you were to work it out, like, how
well, that's
how
what
many
you
times.
Need to do. Yeah, it's like, if this is three times longer than a normal set of strings, is it three times the price? No, rather than it's worth it. But yeah,
I think try some different brands. Look at pricing. Diodario, a great one for that middleman in between Ernie Ball that die a bit quicker, and Elixirs that last for ages, but they don't cost loads more than anything.
Yeah.
And also look into the difference of stainless steel and nickel strings.
Well, that's the main thing. Yeah. Like, I would say, I'm just trying to think. So I think the Godan's got stainless steel strings on it, technically, I think. But I would say I'm a nickel guy. The Dingwall's got stainless steel strings on, but that's because I'm going for that sound. So
clank. Yeah. The rule of thumb is that stainless steel is meant to give you brighter top end, and you know, and then nickel is more focused on the warmth and the light.
Yeah.
So depends what you want out of your sound, really. Slightly off topic, but one, I had some strings delivered this week because I'm going to try out some half rounds from Diodario. So I really want to love flats, and I like the way they sound, but sometimes I just don't like the way that they feel on basses I've had.
Really? Okay. All right.
I've never got on with it. And right. So I'm going to give these a go. I listened to a video with previous guests on the podcast, Philip Conrad, and he was talking about half rounds on a medium scale bass, which, you know, is like two halfway things. And I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about half rounds. Maybe I'll give them a go. So I bought some to test out. So watch this space. That being said, I am now enjoying the flats that are on this new Squire. So it might have been a waste of money. But we'll see. I'm still going to try them and see where we go. But yeah, different types of strings and brands. Give them a go.
Absolutely. Okay. So we've done that one. We have, two left. So I like this one. I like this one a lot. So let me get my phone one-handed. Woo-haw. How do you dial in a tone and level? How do you dial in a tone and level patches on your modelers? Specifically, do you use headphones, studio monitors, or your amp rig? I'm new to the modeling world and struggle with this.
It's a tricky one, this, because I now don't use my Line 6 modeler for live at all. It just sits on my desk, plugged in all the time for demoing and quick tones. Like, I love it for that. It's really good. So don't really have that translation issue with live. There is a translation issue, though, because I have used it live before, and a patch that I think, oh, this sounds great in my ears, I'll play it through an amp and I'm like, oh, like, this doesn't sound that good at all in this room. So it's definitely worth testing it in a room beforehand. It's not just like a direct translation sometimes, especially depending on what you're doing with cab sims and things like that, because it can sound wildly different. Cab sims sound really different, I think. So there's a lot of change in sound that can happen there. For practicing at home, 90% of the time I'm using headphones, because, you know, neighbors, and I feel like it's harder to get over, because I hit the strings quite hard with certain things. It's hard to get over the string sound when you're blasting it through small cone speakers or monitors at you.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like you've got like massive speakers. If you did, that'd be great. And you can hear that and feel that response. But to really cancel out everything else, I'm using headphones most of the time.
Mm. I see.
So quite different to a live environment. So I don't tend to model it thinking this is how it's going to sound live. I always know that it's going to be a slight difference, that I need to test it through an amp, through a PA before being confident this is the one. Here we go. What about you? This is probably more aimed at you, to be honest.
You ideally need to test a tone in the environment it was designed for. So you've got things like the Fletcher Munson curve and all these kind of physics-esque issues and stuff like that, where a tone sounds very different the louder it gets. You know, different frequencies are going to appear as the volume increases. The human ear is going to react in different ways. Like something that's quite quiet, something that sounds good at a quiet volume might be suddenly way too bright, or vice versa at a louder volume. So ideally, if it's going to be something that you're playing a gig with, you need to try and test it in a gig environment. And that is difficult. I would recommend, now I was quite lucky where a venue that I used to play at quite a lot just let me come in like an hour earlier than regular sound check, and I plugged my rig into the PA and set the PA relatively flat, turned it up to a gig volume, and then sort of checked my rig from there, and then kind of went, okay, that's fine, leave it alone there, because we know it works. Another option you can do, if that's difficult for you, try and get hold of some sort of live recording that has no bass in it. You could always find a live recording of something on YouTube, like a live DVD of a band you like, or a band in the style that you're playing in. Go on and use an app like Moises, which is like an AI plugin that removes instruments from the mix. It does a really good job of removing bass from songs, like bass guitar, not just bass frequencies. Like, it will keep the kick drum and all the low end from the kick drum still in the mix. And then you can, and then what you want to do is get that into like your DAW, like Logic or something like that. Set up, plug in your rig, if it's a DI rig or a modeler, for example, into an audio interface, and tweak it to where it sounds good in that mix overall, mainly just using what's available on the modeler, not in the DAW. That will probably, I would say, get you into quite a good ballpark, and then you can figure it out from there over the course of a couple of gigs and sound checks and stuff like that. Yeah. That will probably sort you out, I'd say.
Yeah. I have another world of pain to go through as well in relation to this, because the majority of stuff I'm using modeler for, or for demoing purposes, is difficult because all of the content you're consuming is going to be on through a phone, you know, or
some
speakers or a TV, which isn't going to give you proper speaker emulation.
No, you know, not at all.
Really. So what you'd be expecting. So it's with a lot of tour demos and things like that, you've got to take it with a pinch of salt sometimes, where kind of, you know, I should almost mix the audio just through like reference headphones, which I do have, and phone speakers, so you can see how it sounds. I know a lot of people mixing albums have done that before. Well, you know, they'll have a reference version to listen to how it sounds through crappy speakers.
Well, yeah, that's why you've got the famous car test at the end of the day.
Yeah,
and then exactly. There's a lot of studios where they'll have a like a splitter for the various speakers in the room, and one of the speakers will be like almost like a little Bluetooth speaker that they'll click on, and you'll realize, oh, there's all the low end's gone because. Yeah. It's not a speaker with any low-end capability. Yeah.
You've got to think about how people are consuming the thing that you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So, yeah, just applying that logic to the whole plethora of things you've got to worry about. But yeah, I think that sums that one in.
Exactly. And now we are on to the final question.
Oh, my God.
All right, so final question. What parts of your rig have you completely overthought? All of it. And do you realistically need every bit of your rig? For example, if you're playing punk, do you need a compressor / multiple drives and or multiple preamps? What could you remove and still be in the realm of where you are now? This is good because I've overthought my rig and you have overthought your rig as well.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. And there's things that I have prioritized with my rig. Or want to look at prioritizing in the future that this kind of comes into. If we're going down to just sound alone, this way too complicated. So, I mean, do you want to go through yours first or should I go through mine?
Well, I mean, there's not a lot of like components with mine. Mine is like, you know, a wireless into a multi-effects fancy pants unit into front of house at the end of the day. However, what's inside that? I mean, I have simplified it now. It's mainly like you go in, there's like a little noise gate, a compressor, a drive that I sometimes turn on and off, a chorus that I sometimes turn on and off, an octave that I sometimes turn on and off, an amp sim, a cab, a bit of EQ, off we go. I could do a gig tomorrow and only have the amp sim, you know, into a cab. And then off we go. But I like having compression. I like having drive as an option to fill that sound in. But yeah, if I slimmed it all down, I could go bass, guitar lead, tuner, some sort of... Now, I was going to mention something like, you know, the Bad Water by Warbs Audio, but that's got compression and stuff like that as well. But, you know, some sort of... preamp just to sort of tweak the tone a little bit to what I like, and then that could just go straight into the house, front of the house, and I could probably do every gig I have to do with that setup. I could do that. Do I want to? No, but I could do.
That's the thing. It's like, yeah, I could go just like direct into a sounds amp, then go live. But like, I don't like the way that sounds. So it's like,
yeah,
depends what you want and what you get fun out of it at the end of the day. You know, what do you enjoy? What gives you? What drives you? And yeah, that's part of it for me as well. It's like, I want to enjoy the sound I'm having. Like,
oh, yeah.
I love gear in that way.
Yeah.
I was going to see if there would be a way that I could pick up my rig to show you, but I'm not going to bother. It's too heavy and I'll probably fall over.
I also just realized my rig's even more complicated now because what I'm doing is, as well as splitting it to front of house, I'm running a separate signal into the Ashdown Ant, and then that's going into a cab on stage. So that's like, that's lots of things going on where I've had a few people message me going, how are you doing that? Is that not like, does the quad cortex not do what the ant does? And I'm like, well, it kind of does.
Yeah, but it doesn't power a cab.
Exactly. And that's what I'm using. It's mainly because I don't touch the EQ on the ant. I click the little shape button and then everything's flat and then off it goes. That's it, really.
Yeah. So you want it to bypass that, really. You just want the power. Just want the power.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and for me, so I'll give you a breakdown of why my current live rig is.
Mm-hmm.
It's all in one flight case, like one of the Gator cases.
Yeah.
In a rack. It goes in the drawer at the top, which goes into my wireless. From there, it goes into... God, I've forgotten now.
Now you know it's complicated.
Yeah. Yeah. Then it goes into the Sans amp. Then it goes into the Ashdown triple shot.
Okay.
So preamp, drive, you know, it's already overthought there because I could use the drive on the Sansa.
Yeah, and I was meaning to ask, actually, obviously this is in a flight case.
Yeah.
How do you turn the triple shot on and off?
I don't.
It's always on.
It's always on. So I set it to now that I don't have any pedals or anything out front.
Okay. This is with the Nirvana and Foo Fighters tribute. Okay.
Yep. I will Makes sometimes
sense. Okay, yeah.
There's rare moments in there where I could, but I don't turn on and off the effects. The tone is fairly driven. But it's not like Dark Glass, driven. It's just a bit of oomph on top. A lot of it comes from my attack or my playing style as well. So it goes into that. Then from there, cable going down the rig into the Dark Glass E500 head,
Your favorite.
Which is very flat and no drive on that at the minute. You know, already the rig is way more complicated because I could just do everything going into that. And it does sound
true.
Good.
Yeah, yeah.
It does sound good. But I will say the Sans amp is the sleeper in that, where it's giving it a little bit more shape and a little bit more push into the amp. And I really like preamps for doing that. It just makes it feel a bit more real, I think, a bit more ampish, which is a weird concept. But anyway.
Yeah, but makes sense.
So it seems like a complicated rig, but thousands of people do this, just like pedal board with pedals going into amp. That's essentially all it is. Then it goes the DI out, which has a cab sim on it from the E500, into the DI patch bay. Now, that sounds complicated, but it's not. It's just a XLR going into an XLR, which then the front of house just plugs into.
Yeah,
it's just a way of easily labeling front of house, plug in here, in. What it also allows me to do is do any signal splitting if I want to. So say I wanted a clean DI down the line, I could do that because I can then take the DI out of the Sans amp maybe and do that into something else if I wanted to. I don't do that. This is where it's like meaninglessly overcomplicated because I don't utilize it in that way currently. But what my current plan is to then run a XLR out into this new recording device I've got to record my tones live. So yeah. I've got, this is for front of house, and then this signal goes into the recorder to record directly onto my phone so I can make videos live. And so
and you're going to do it onto your phone?
Yeah, directly on. That's what that device does. It'll allow me to directly replace the audio from my phone.
Right.
And do that.
Oh, so you're going to stick the phone somewhere and clip
record.
Because I'm trying to work out a way of doing that, but I don't want the phone to be filming. I'm going to have the GoPro filming, and then just a way to capture the audio, and then later I'll sync them up.
Well, you can do that. You can do that as well. Either just recording a video that's not used, or by just
voice note.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The same thing. Because essentially all it's doing is replacing the microphone input with this. So you're just going bass, sound, in.
Yeah.
So anything you're recording, just record that. So that's where my rig is overcomplicated, but it means that everything is all in one and absolutely everything is powered by one kettle lead. So,
which is great.
Yeah, which is because
mine's
two.
Yeah.
Sorry, what I forgot to say about this rig is that it has, as well as the draw out the front on the back, it has a power bank. So it means I can charge my phone. I've got like three power slots free at the minute. I'm powering the head and a power supply for the pedals on that. So there's no daisy chaining going on. There's a little MSR power supply. So it's all I turn up, bonk, plug in, go, ready. Like it's that, I love that thing about it. Nothing, no faffing, it's just ready to go. So there we go. That's it.
Could you simplify that for a gig? Like, could you gig with, if you had to only gig with one component, which would you pick?
It would have to be the E500 because that could do everything. I've got drives in there built in. I can do everything on there. It's just preference at the end of the day of what else you do. So it's overcomplicated in that sense. But you know, everyone could simplify their rig technically if they just remove everything and just use bass amp.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
But yeah, That's the state of it at the minute. I have got another pedal board that I did a video on recently that I would like to try live, maybe. But I mean, this rig is working very, very well for me at the minute. So,
yeah,
we'll see.
Very nice. Well, that is all the questions.
Wow, we did that in very good time as well.
Not bad. I expected it to be a hell of a lot longer than that.
Yeah, that's what she said. So it's, you know, we've done very well. Thank you so much for everyone that submitted the questions that we've answered today. Let us know what you thought about this episode. Do you want to see more of this, just like diving into loads of questions, or do you like the format we've got before? Yeah. Let us know. We'd love to hear. If you want to submit questions in the future, please go and follow us on Instagram at InThePocketPod, where you will see various bits of content related to, like, whether it's clips from this or us asking for questions and suggesting guests and things like that. That is where you can reach us the most on there. If you are listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, your listening platform of choice, please remember to rate us 5 stars. It really helps us reach more people. The same as well. You might be listening on there thinking, I wish I could see their handsome faces. And you can on YouTube. We've got our own channel where we are doing the video version of this very podcast. Wave for the camera, Chris. Wave. No, don't flip them off. No, Chris. No. No, he's actually doing it now. Go and subscribe to us over on there as well. It all helps us grow and keep going. Every week, we're so close to giving up. So close.
So close. So, Mia moments away from knocking this on the head at literally any point.
No, we're not. We love doing it. And
Johnny isn't. I am.
So yeah, go and check us out on all those platforms and do all of those things that help us out, please. Speaking of, Chris, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me quite literally everywhere under That Guy on Bass. And yes, I'm going to do a shameless plug for my band now. Haha, whether you like it or not. My band Dala yesterday brought out our debut EP. It's called Human Nature. There is an extra song on there that no one's heard before called Willow Tree. And that's kind of like a little extra single that we've thrown on alongside the existing singles that we brought out over the last like 4 or 5 months. Please do check it out. It's taken a long time and a lot of effort to get this out. And we are all very excited to actually finally be able to share it with people. So please have a listen and do a share and all that sort of stuff.
A share Lloyd.
Yes, do a share. You know, do you believe in life after love?
Yeah. Go check it out. All the links will be in the description of everything. So please head down there and go and check it out. You can find me on Instagram, TikTok, etc. At Johnny Dibble, and subscribe to me on YouTube under the same course. Once again, everyone, thank you so much for listening. See you next time.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.